At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week. This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
The trial, or should I just say the saga now, of Karen Reed, because our trial is over. We may be seeing another one. We'll find out more about that on the 22nd. It continues. The saga, it never ends, no matter what, even though we had a hung jury. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. You have been very vocal on this trial over the last, I don't know how many months we've been talking about it now, quite a while, years in some cases, but obviously the active trial over the last many months. Well, there's new interesting things that are popping up. We have motions that are being put out by the defense saying that, hey, you know what? The jury was unanimous on some of these charges, on counts one and count three. But we had no way to put it on the juror form. And we didn't think to speak up when we had an opportunity and the jury wasn't polled. So those charges, we shouldn't be in double jeopardy with Karen Reed if, in fact, this is taken back to trial. Let's talk about that first. Jennifer, before we get to the infamous picture, what's your thoughts on that motion, considering we never really truly did have an official count on any of this?
Well, a couple of things. So we're looking at, there were three affidavits, and these affidavits were put together by Yannetti and Jackson, mm-hmm. two by Jackson, one by Yannetti. Let's first talk about Yannetti's. Okay. Yannetti's is hearsay on yep. hearsay on hearsay. And I'm not just saying that,
it's
I'm
telephone.
Saying that very specifically.
Yeah, it's a game of telephone.
Yeah, it's juror tells intermediary, intermediary tells informant, informant tells lawyer, and lawyer tells judge. Mm-hmm. That's five.
Yep.
It's just absurd. Am I saying that it didn't happen? You know, who's the intermediary? Is it Turtle Boy? I mean, I have a lot of questions on this. If this came to me as an investigator, it's not worth anything unless that juror is willing to put an affidavit together like we saw in the Murdaugh case mm-hmm. and come forward and say, this is what happened.
Sure.
Okay, that's point number one. So Yannetti's is just to me off the table. In terms of Jackson, he says that actually there's only two stages now, right? The jury came to the lawyer went to the judge saying what they're saying. And generally speaking, and not all of them, by the way, said the same about count three. It was really related to count one that seemed to be consistent, which was the second degree murder charge. I found it interesting that I think we're talking about four people, but nevertheless, we don't really know.
Yeah.
What are the other eight people saying? You know, if they could be, would they say, no, we just said we would drop the second degree if everybody agreed to go with the manslaughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or listen, as long as you guys go with the manslaughter, we'll drop the third degree or third charge. Sorry. The leaving the scene without, you know, resulting in death. In other words, was there bartering going on and they're considering kind of that bartering that was discussed behind closed doors as to saying it was all unanimous? You know, yeah, it's unanimous under certain terms, like, yeah, but you got to vote for manslaughter.
Yeah.
Because remember, they said there it ended up being an 8-4 split.
Yeah.
And I even saw a 9-3. So, you know, the bottom line is there's no redos.
Yeah.
Once the whistle's been blown in an NFL game, it's all over. And even when you go back and look at the film and say, oh my God, that catch was real. The Cowboys actually really did win.
Uh-huh.
He caught it in the end zone. You don't get a do-over. And there's Supreme Court law showing this. There's no way to give what they call relief for this situation. And in fact, Judge Cannone already came out, put it in writing. There was no verdict. And she met with everybody. She knows best.
Yeah. Well, and some of the arguments that are being made really don't make a lot of sense, quite honestly. If count one and count three were what they were agreeing on lifting, but count two was where they were stuck. If you're going to dismiss count three, count two kind of connects with that. I mean, it just, if you're going to just say no to one, you can't really say no to the other for it to make any sense. So again, it's just kind of one of those, it's out there. There's the accusations of it. Could did the judge error in this trial by not getting a count, by not figuring this out better so we don't end up in this sort of a situation? And also, did she err in not making the juror form clearer than it was? I mean, they brought it up, Unetti or Jackson, I forgot who it was, but right before they were giving the jury instructions and they were looking at this saying, this needs to be clearer, she said, no, it's good. Go back, do your job.
Yeah, but there was kind of actually an act two of that, right? Mm-hmm. So Jackson said that. She said, basically, I'm tired. I'm going to look at it. They reconvene, and she and I think this was already a day into deliberations. Mm-hmm. And Jackson said, "Whoa, the form, you didn't make the changes that I brought up." Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, that's because I decided I've always used this form, and we're sticking with the form." But then she went back on that ruling and said, "Okay, we'll make the changes," which I always thought was very detrimental to the prosecution and helpful for the defense, because literally you're going to have a clerk go in there and say, okay, I need all these pages back. We're changing it. And she did. She changed it to what Jackson asked for, which I thought, as again, was harmful for the prosecution, not the defense.
It just brings up so many questions and possible appellate issues. The picture, let's talk about the picture of Karen Reed and Alan Jackson that everybody is talking about. Again, it's an image. I think we've seen it from a couple angles now. It looks a little romantic. It could be nothing at all. You get caught in a weird angle at some time, but I don't know how many weird angles I've ever been caught around where my arm is nearly cupping a woman's breast and then my other is around her midriff just by accident. I mean, unless usually you're like, let me grab somebody before they get hit by a bus, but that clearly wasn't that. And I don't know that my arm would be in that position either if I'm grabbing somebody from being hit by a bus. It's a little odd. How do you think that affects things going forward here? We don't even know if there's going to be a retrial yet.
Well, so my prediction is there will be a retrial. And this is why I think the state, the Commonwealth, actually, as they're referred to in this case, truly believes she's responsible. And they believe they have the goods and the facts to back it up. And so they do not want somebody that they believed committed, in their view, a second degree murder out free.
Then
for the rest of their lives.
If they believe that, why didn't they bring that this first round? I mean, it's going to be the same stuff from before. And at the end of the day, I just think you keep getting the same equation. You keep putting the same numbers into the calculator and you press equal. I don't see it really differing on another round here, because there does seem to be enough reasonable doubt, and that's what it is, reasonable doubt, to not convict her. Is there a lot in here that looks like she hit him? Yeah, without a doubt, there truly is. I mean, if I were to be a betting man and what happened that night, I think she probably hit him and has no idea she hit him. But I don't know that they're ever going to be able to truly convince a jury of that with the amount of bad actors and other pieces of reasonable doubt in this case.
Well, I agree about your equation analogy, but they're going to change the equation. First of all, I think what has to change, and if it doesn't change, shame on the whole situation. They have to change venue. Mm-hmm. You can't have pink-shirted people, eating popcorn, drinking beer, having their kids out there. Like, you're literally going to a carnival.
Yes.
That is the setting. It's absolutely, they're dressing up like, clowns out there. It's insane.
Yeah.
And you can't have that repeated, literally following the bus where the jurors were taking away and coming. I mean, there's no way for jury members not to see all that baloney. Now, maybe it affected them negatively, because if we're to believe these affidavits, you're looking at a 9-3 and 8-4 on the manslaughter, right? So she really escaped with not being convicted, it seems to me.
Yeah.
You know, it was hung. Look, this was just plain hung. Everybody was dug in and nobody was giving in. But you're looking at a large number of people that did believe she was guilty of manslaughter, and that maybe were going to cave on two other charts to make sure she was convicted of the manslaughter. That's kind of how I see it there. But the equation that has to change is the venue has to change, the in terms of where it happens. They also need to change venue for the jury selection. Normally, I never say that, because people are so busy in their lives. And unless you're a true crimer or unless you're a newsie, you know, you're not necessarily. It's like asking me, you know, what's going on in the race world.
Sure.
You know, I don't follow racing. But in this case, it's so different. They have political signs, bumper stickers. They've paid for billboards. You know, outside of where the Patriots play, they have done so much going through the streets with bullhorns in all these municipalities. They have made a true stance. But if you pull from Boston, Boston's so much bigger, so many more people, everybody's going to probably have heard of it, but not necessarily. I was at the airport the other day and I asked a guy, I don't know, we got to talking. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Boston. I said, oh, have you heard of the Karen Reed case? John O'Keefe? Who? Mm-hmm. Who are they? Told him a few words. He goes, I've never heard of that.
Sure.
So if you pull from Boston, I think there's a chance you truly have people that aren't persuaded one way or the other, and you don't have pink shirts chasing their bus. It's just clean.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.